Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, as I mentioned, I would have started with the Saints because the Saints got jammed by the refs again. But if you're a Saints fan, and I thought this was the worst news of the morning until that Roethlisberger news broke. If you're a Saints fan, the worst part about yesterday was not that you got worked by the Zebras for the third straight game. It was not that you lost 27-9 in that revenge game. It was that you lost Drew Brees. You lost him for the game, and apparently much longer than that. Midway through the first quarter, he dropped back to pass, and Brees' hand hit Aaron Donald's hand.
Third down and 8. Brees over the middle for Cook. Incomplete. Pressure by Aaron Donald. It is. The right hand of Donald, the right hand, mainly the thumb of Brees, and he's out.
It was his thumb, and Sean telling me he just simply couldn't grip the ball.
Fox NFL right there. So more specifically, what that was the thumb on Donald's hand. And Brees spent most of the rest of the day on a sideline in a baseball hat with his hand wrapped. So he was going to meet with a hand specialist in L.A., but you could tell from the way he talked after the game that this was different.
You're hitting your hands on stuff all the time, right? Helmets and different things. And, you know, you might get jammed thumbs, jammed fingers, you know, different things where it swells up and what have you. But this felt like it was something a bit more significant, preventing me from gripping the ball.
Man, these guys know, don't they? These guys know. Like when Roethlisberger grabbed at his elbow, you knew it was bad. When Drew Brees says, hey, listen, you know, you're always hitting your hand, you're always jamming your fingers, but this felt different. If Drew Brees is saying that it felt like something a bit more significant, that's not good. That didn't sound good, and that's not good. And as it turns out, it is something a bit more significant. Something a bit more significant like a torn ligament in the thumb on his throwing hand. So he is expected to have surgery today and reportedly will miss about 6 weeks. So that also sucks. Not in a season-ending surgery way, but it sucks. If true, 6 weeks would take him to the bye week and then potentially they'd have him in line to return week 10 against the Falcons. But what that means is the Saints are most likely going to be rolling with Teddy Bridgewater. And they'll have him for games against Seattle, Dallas, Tampa Bay, Jacksonville, Chicago, and Arizona. You've got some pretty nasty defenses in there. Now, any other team, any other backup, any other coach, I would say they're in serious, serious trouble. But there is a reason why they want to keep Bridgewater. There's a reason why Bridgewater wanted to stay. And if anybody can scheme and coach it up, it's Sean Payton. So the Steelers lose their Hall of Fame quarterback for the rest of the year, and I'm going to say their season is already over. The Saints lose their Hall of Fame quarterback, but not for the rest of the year, so I'm not going to say their season is over yet. But that's a bad, bad day. That's a bad day for the Saints. And then everything else on top of that is just window dressing, right? The rest of the game, that was just adding insult on top of injury. But, Saints fan, I'll give you this. That was not just any insult. That's the kind of insult that only comes where you get screwed by the refs yet again. And that's exactly what happened. Go ahead and roll it.
That ball's out. Picked up by the Saints and Jordan. And now they're saying incomplete pass. And they've blown it dead. Jordan's down the sideline, but Walt Anderson is saying incomplete pass, no fumble. During the break, they made the announcement that this ball was out. It's a fumble. It's not an incomplete pass. It didn't look like it was that close. And Mike Pereira, by saying incomplete pass, they blew it dead.
Just a killer mistake that hurts the Saints so badly. When it's that close, you have to lean the fumble.
Jammed hard again. That's three straight games now. The NFC Championship game with that no call on the pass interference. I mean the second degree assault. Last week with the clock at the end of the first half. And now yesterday with whatever the hell that was. At some point, Sean Payton's going to completely explode on a ref. And when he does, I'm not going to blame him. He was trying to take the high road after the game, although he did manage to make his point. Quote, when we get poor officiating or we get an awful call like that, we can't control that. Our focus this week is going to be on cleaning up the penalties and making sure we got the right guys on the field too. End quote. Also, Cam Jordan made his point as well.
You say a touchdown got taken away. I mean, I didn't even hear the whistle. I grabbed the ball 15, 20 yards down, and allegedly a whistle was blown. Clearly, I mean, a whistle was blown. Where normally you let the play happen, any referee usually tells you you let the play happen, and then you go back and review the play.
Did you catch that footlocker blast? Perfectly delivered, Cam. And then he chased it brilliantly by tweeting, quote, "No disrespect to Foot Locker." Of course not. Of course not. The guys and gals at Foot Locker, they do their jobs. You ask for an 11, you get an 11. They don't come back with a size 7 in the wrong shoe. The Saints would tell you the refs do not do their jobs when it comes to Saints games. And how can you argue with them at this point? Listen, I'm not saying that the refs are targeting the Saints. I don't think they're out to screw New Orleans, but I can't blame a Saints fan if they think that. And if you want even more salt for that wound, Saints fan, here is the explanation from the NFL head of officiating, Al Riveron. Quote, "The ruling on the field was that of an incomplete pass outside of 2 minutes challenged by New Orleans. Like every other replay, we look at every reviewable aspect of the play. In this situation, after looking at all of the angles afforded to us, it was clear and obvious that it was a fumble. However, by rule, we can give it to the defense if there's a clear recovery. Since we blew the whistle for an incomplete pass, by rule, we cannot give them the advance. So after we looked at it and we changed the ruling on the field, we gave the ball to the defense on the 13-yard line, and we do not charge them with a timeout." End quote. All right, so I know what you're thinking, Saints fan. Why don't the referees just let the play go, then come back later and rule it an incomplete pass if they have to? According to Riveron, that's what they're told. Quote, "We tell our referees, when in doubt, let it play out. If it is an incomplete pass, we can always come back and make it an incomplete pass. In this situation, as it occurs here, the most we can do is give the ball to the defense, but we cannot, by rule, give them the advance. All we can do is give them the ball at the spot of the clear recovery." End quote. So, the referees are told to let the play go, and if they have to come back, they can rule it an incomplete pass. They can do that. Except they didn't let the play go. And it came back to bite the Saints again. So the good news is, you're right, Saints fan. The refs should let the play go. The bad news is, they didn't do it. And because they didn't do it, you didn't get a touchdown. You didn't get a TD, but you did get screwed. Again. To recap, Drew Brees, hand injury, requiring surgery today. Jam job by the refs, you lost the revenge game, and not just the game to the Rams, but you had to watch Cooper Kupp drop one of the best runs after a catch you'll ever see. I want to make sure I get that in, too.
Goff throws, pass caught, Kupp, room to run, still going. Cooper Kupp, what a touchdown for the Rams. Brilliant catch and run.
Again, I'm not trying to dump salt into your wound. In fact, I'm here to help, Saints fan. If it'll make you feel better, the referees won't let anybody have anything nice because they ruled that he was down on the one-yard line. So where does that leave both those two teams? Obviously, the Saints have got some big problems now because Brees is out. In terms of the Rams, I'm not really sure what kind of conclusions you can draw about the Rams so far. They didn't exactly dominate a Panthers team in Week 1, who looked terrible in Week 2. And then the offense took a while to get rolling yesterday, and they suffered a bunch of injuries. But after watching that play, I think we can safely say that Cooper Kupp's ACL is fine. That was a badass run, and the Rams are 2-0. Neither win was pretty, but they're both wins. That's all that matters. The Saints lost their Hall of Fame quarterback, and the Steelers have lost Ben Roethlisberger for the entire year. 0-2, Big Ben's done for the entire year. Again, I don't want to say the Steelers season is over, but the Steelers season is over. Clones. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. We want beef. Pure and simple. Where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. You know, shriveled, dry, tasteless. Old Trapper Beef Jerky is made from lean strips of steak in quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four great flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere at all. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you are buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Trevor Price. Trev, what's going on?
Oh, man, it's good to hear your voice, like honey syrup.
Just like that, Trevor. Exactly like honey syrup. All right, so let me ask you. Let me start right here. Nobody wants to jump to conclusions after only two games, but when you get the news that Ben Roethlisberger is done for the season, Pittsburgh is 0-2, Trevor, is there any doubt in your mind that the Steelers are officially done for the season?
Unless they can somehow coax Brett Favre out of retirement, yeah, you can – kiss the baby on that one. And that's the worst thing, right? When this happens in week two, it's kind of like, how do you sell tickets for the next six home, like the next seven home games? Like, how do you drive any excitement with Mason Rudolph? No disrespect to my homeboy Mason, but how do you live with yourself? Like, do you become the Dolphins and just say, you know, let's just throw caution to the wind and just throw one of the offensive linemen out there, see if he can throw. I don't know how you motivate that sinking ship. Nobody's fault, right? But still, man, I've been on one of those teams before. That's hard slogging there. That's like, show up, get your paycheck, don't be late to work.
Trevor Price joining us. You know, you mentioned hard slogging and what's it like. It can really apply to Miami, which I'll get to in a minute. But when you look at Ben, Trevor, he's 37 now. He's coming off. He will be coming off a season-ending surgery to his throwing elbow. Then what does his future look like? In other words, is it as simple as have the surgery, miss the year, come back good as new? Or at this age, after all those hits, is this a totally different deal?
You know, somebody was talking to me today about, you know, tackling Ben Roethlisberger in my office. And I was like, look, I remember when Big Ben was big. Now he's not all that big. I remember he used to put on his flap jacket and shoulder, his rib cage protector. And he looked like a sumo wrestler. He doesn't look quite as big now, and I think that's part of it. If you're going to be Big Ben and throw defensive linemen off of you and shrug your shoulders, he needs to gain some weight. And I hate saying that about quarterbacks, but it is a fact. He looks thin, right? But that's kind of what you have to do as you get older in the NFL. You have to lose some weight to keep the weight off. Just make it through the season. But if you're taking the beating that this dude takes, even throwing the ball the way he does, you need some baggage behind you, my man. You can't look like this. You look like a bad-built tight end rather than a quarterback, right? So I think his age is less of a thing than his body is. Because if you're going to do that, if you're going to try to be that quarterback you've always been, you can't do it at 172 pounds.
Dude, he does not weigh 172 pounds, Trevor.
You can't do it at 175 pounds.
Trevor Price joining us. I'm not going to negotiate with you on his weight. I guarantee he's not a buck 72. He's not a buck 75. All right, so what about the Saints, Trevor? Trevor Price has got a couple of Super Bowl rings. He is an author. He is a media mogul. The Saints have an absolute nightmare of a day yesterday, Trevor. They get another bad call from the refs. They lose to the Rams. Now you've got news this morning that Drew Brees needs surgery on his thumb. He might miss 6 weeks. How bad of a day was that for the Saints?
Here's the thing, man. Like, when defensive linemen put all that tape in their hands, or offensive linemen put all that tape in their hands, that stuff becomes a cast, right? It's so much tape and it hardens. Even if it's supposed to be soft, you put too much of it on, it hardens. So as Aaron Donald, the whirling dervish that he is coming at you 22 miles an hour, and Drew Brees is flinging his arm forward at 22 miles an hour, some hits hard objects, some loses. 6 weeks is not real. That's not real to me. Because I've had people hit me in the head with their thumbs. I've gone after thumbs. I know what that kind of looks like. And the way that hand hit Aaron Donald's basically cast, 6 weeks is not it, man. That's going to be 12, 13 weeks. That might be season ending. Either way, Teddy Bridgewater has a chance. Let's see what he does. They pay him that kind of money for a reason. So you wanted it, homeboy? Here you go.
Dr. Price, did you just double the amount of time that they're speculating that Drew Brees is going to be out?
Double it.
Of course, you did tell me that Ben Roethlisberger weighs 172 pounds.
Man, I'm on fire.
Dude, you should be fired. I'm on fire. All right, serious note, though. Nobody's going to replace Drew Brees, but Teddy Bridgewater is a former Pro Bowler and an Offensive Rookie of the Year. How do you think that he is going to do stepping in for Brees?
He'll do fine, but they have to tailor it to him a little bit, right? So he has some movement skills, right? And I'm not saying that because the man is of African-American descent. I'm just saying he has some. He does not have a lot. That's a fact. He's not the fastest dude in the world, but he has some moving skills. So they'll do some things, get him out in the pocket, get him on the edge, things that you didn't really do with Drew Brees too much. But also, he'll be able to move to his left and throw the ball. The thing about Drew Brees, people have always said about Drew Brees, if you blitz him, you blitz his right hand, make him run left, right? If he runs left, his completion percentage goes way down. If he moves right 2-3 feet, 2-3, 6 yards, completion percentage goes way up. So they'll be able to do some different things, I think. I'm not an offensive genius yet, but I think they'll be able to do some different things, and offense will look a tad bit different.
We're talking to Trevor Price. We're talking about the Steelers. We're talking about the Saints. Listen, as a team, you're always going to say you can't control what the refs do, and you've got to find a way to rise above it, and the bad calls are going to happen to everybody. But when you're the Saints and you've got that non-PI call, you've got the official clock error last week and then yesterday, how hard is it to rise above all that?
Man, get over it. Look, you got to get over it, man. You're not cursed. Football fandom can be a weird thing, right? You think the refs have it out for us. No, bad refereeing happens every week. Jim? I'm going to tell you the fact. I was held on every play I've ever played in football in my life since I was 11. I've never been blocked cleanly in my life. I should have literally 8,000 flags should have been thrown on me. But that's life. That's life. Hold on. Let me turn left for a second. Can we talk about Aaron Rodgers and his head coach?
Yeah, go ahead. What do you make of that?
Okay. Can we say the most truthful thing in the world? Aaron Rodgers hates that guy. Can we just be honest? And I am not talking about Jim. I'm not talking about the exchange in the sideline, right, where they were getting at each other and yelling at each other's face. I'm talking about the things he says in the paper. Anytime your quarterback says about your coach, hey, if you're friends with Sean McVay, they'll give you a job. And your head coach happens to be a friend of Sean McVay who got that job because he was on the Rams staff, you are saying something. You are saying something. Watch Aaron Rodgers on the sideline hug it out with Mike Bettini, with the defensive corner, the defensive coordinator who was in Baltimore with me and in the Jets with me. Watch how Aaron Rodgers talks to this guy. What you cannot do, what these team GMs and owners cannot do, is give an old, cranky man like Aaron Rodgers a kid for a coach. You cannot do that. That was listen to me right now. Clones, everybody listen. That is going to burn down, and I don't care how many games they win. It's going to burn.
Trevor, I'm listening to you right now. I'm listening to you call Mike Pettin Mike Pettini.
And then you want me to take you seriously.
Come on, man.
We've called him Pettini, Panerai. We called him everything but Mike Pettin.
Trevor, you're just talking out your backside now. Are you making this stuff up as you go along? What are you talking about?
Not at all. I'm telling you.
Can you literally say to me that because Aaron Rodgers said, if you know Sean McVay, you'll get a job, that means, quote, he hates his head coach?
Look at everything else, Jim. I do this. I'm the king of the underhanded comments. And this is the wordiest offense I've ever been in. Everything he says is a slight against his head coach.
Hey, look, I mean, it's different, right? It's a new coach. It's a new system. It's a new vernacular. He's got himself a little wristband on. It's an adjustment. They just beat.
12-year-old lead him a man. Listen, here's the thing, Jim. And I'm being dead serious. Will that guy be a great head coach one day? Yes, he will. But as a head coach, the first thing you have to do is be a leader of men. And when you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers who needs to be led, if he's not led, he's going to lead. And right now, Aaron Rodgers is leading. And he's telling it. He's basically.
I don't see. Look, I'm not there, Trevor. You can definitely see things that I cannot see because of what you've done. I'm just looking at on the outside, looking in. They beat a Minnesota Viking team that a lot of people thought were going to go to the Super Bowl. There's going to be some growing pains, right? The two of these guys, I'm sure, are both headstrong guys. They're going to knock heads. They've got to learn each other. They've got to learn a new system. I don't think that equates to Aaron Rodgers hates his new head coach.
I'm telling you, look, you can take it anywhere. I'm telling you, whenever your quarterback goes to the media and says, hey, they'll give anybody who's a friend of Sean McVay a head coaching job. He is saying something. Listen to what
Yeah, but
the
that's
guy
it's kind of like
saying.
That's the joke. Everybody says that. That's the joke. If you've ever met Sean McVay, you'll get a head coaching job. I should get a head coaching job.
Right. But it's one thing if it's a joke and you have not hired one. The Packers hired one. You cannot. A guy like Aaron Rodgers, how old is Aaron Rodgers? 36, 37? His head coach is 33? That does not work, man. It does not work, and I know they're good. I know Aaron Rodgers is having a good time. I mean, the team has beaten Minnesota.
Look, hot take factory. It's too soon.
It's too soon.
All right. I hear you. I hear what you're saying, and then the clones will react to what you're saying. I've given you my reaction. I get it, respectfully. Trevor, let me ask you this, though. If you're on a team like the Dolphins, right, and you've seen every good player get dealt or leave in free agency, and then you get absolutely lit up in the first two games, how are you feeling about the next 14 games and the physical and psychological punishment that you're about to take over the course of a long season?
That's tough, man. I would be – usually I'd be the guy that says, look, show up, do your job, get your paycheck. I think it's a little more than that. I think when you're – here's the thing, though. They have NFL players, right? Don't ever forget that these guys were scouted. They were drafted. They could have picked other people. They picked these guys, and this is what they're going to war with. I don't know how an NFL team gets that bad that fast. Maybe it's just a quarterback, but they have two decent ones, right? I mean, I wouldn't call Fitzpatrick garbage, and I wouldn't call Josh Rosen garbage. But I've been on a bad team, right? My Ravens team in 2008, we were bad. The Jets team, one of my Broncos teams was bad. But at least we were competitive. You don't have to win every game, but we have to look like an NFL football team. And how many of these pregame speeches are we really going to listen to from Brian Flores? Guys, come out there and do it, man. Shut up. We know what you're doing. You know what I mean? So I think there's going to be some things that they have to come to Jesus moment as players, as people, as organization. But obviously the ownership and GM are on board with what Brian Flores is doing. They are tanking for whoever the quarterback is they want next year. And everybody knows it.
Trevor, really quickly, I've got about 60 seconds. I would feed you another NFL take that you could wreck. However, Collider.com recently wrote this. Koolapari, an Army of Frogs, is one of the best animated TV series on Netflix right now. That is extremely high praise. What did that mean to you?
It meant a lot, but it didn't mean that I hate my head coach like Aaron Rodgers does. Look at that, Chip. Look how I go back around.
Yeah, I see what you did there, Trevor, and I don't really respect it at all. My man, I try and throw you a bone, and what do you do with it? You choke on it.
Well, it was good. It's great. Thank you very much, Collider. I appreciate it. But here's the thing, Jim. I know that. So let's go with that.
Yesterday was a really weird day because so much of it was so similar to week one. I mean, I could run back almost the exact same things that I said a week ago. You know, like the Patriots are a good football team. The Dolphins are a horrible football team. And I don't mean horrible. I mean like historically horrible. Like, what are they still doing in the NFL? Horrible. How bad? According to ESPN stats and info, after getting blown out 59-10 and 43-0, the Dolphins have the third worst point differential through two games of any team in NFL history. The only teams worse are the 61 Oakland Raiders and the 1923 Rochester Jeffersons. If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. If your name is being mentioned with the Rochester Jeffersons, you're in serious trouble. Not to be confused with the Manhattan Jeffersons. Then that'd be great. I'm not sure there's a guy right now on the Dolphins roster that I would pay actual money to see. But if my man George Jefferson were still around, I would give him a blank check to talk junk and slam the door in Willis's face all day long. I love George Jefferson. Man, I love that show. I miss that show. I miss that guy. Go look it up when you get some time. George Jefferson slamming the door in Willis's face makes me laugh every single time. Hey, George. Just slamming the door in anybody's face is funny. But George doing it to Willis was the best. Anyway, the Patriots. The Patriots are still good. The Dolphins are still horrible. Lamar Jackson is still pretty good for a wide receiver or a running back.
Not bad for a running back.
And Kyler Murray is still electric in the second half. The Saints are still getting jammed by the refs. The Chargers are still having horrible luck with injuries. Safety Adrian Phillips, who was replacing injured safety Derwin James, is now out indefinitely with a broken forearm. You know, like, I could say the same things about week 2 that I said in week 1. Oh, and there is another thing that carried over from week 1. An opposing quarterback threw an unforgivable interception to the Packers' secondary.
Fake to Cook, Cousins bootlegs right, chased by Dean Lowry. Lofts it right corner of the end zone. Leaping interception.
Kevin King's
got it. Green Bay football. A spectacular leaping grab, and now the officials are talking it over. It is Green Bay ball, yes. Kevin King high in the air.
Packers radio on the call. I mean, I'm telling you, that guy cannot throw that ball in that situation. He just can't. Hell, no quarterback can throw that ball in that situation. A jump ball interception on first down from the 8. That can't happen. You know it. I know it. Most of all, Kirk Cousins knows it.
There's no justification. There's no defense to be made. It was unacceptable. It put my team in a terrible position. We had worked so hard to get down there. Had a great chance to take the lead, potentially, you know, win the game. And was just, you know, I just took it out of our hands by making that throw.
My man, I would love to say that you win as a team and you lose as a team and you got to stop being so hard on yourself. But I can't, because you're right about that. And even worse than losing a game that you could have won is losing your Hall of Fame quarterback. And maybe for an extended period of time. And as I've been talking about, both Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger dinged and both are out. Brees out for 6 weeks, reportedly. Ben out for the entire year. And then you've got that Sunday night game. In week 1, it was the Pats blowing out the Steelers. Last night, it was the Eagles and the Falcons in a brawl. A brawl. Now, not necessarily the kind of brawl you want to see. In fact, if you had, or if you were a Matt Ryan hater, you had a lot of juice in your tank for most of the night. If you think Carson Wentz is overrated, it would have been hard to point out why he wasn't last night. Both guys, though, kept grinding as you'd expect a couple of dudes with their pedigree would. And then they both showed up huge when they needed it most. The Eagles were so busted up, they were practically running out of guys for Wentz to throw to. At one point, I thought they were going to lob a phone call to Eagle legend Jason Avant to see that if he still had a gamer and some screw-ins. And you know how he does. You know how he does. He would have gone for 300 yards if they asked him to, because Jason Avant is the man. He's a fine man, and I like him a lot. You know why he's the man? Because Jason Avant has great hands. Jason Avant is a fine man, and I do like him a lot. And he catches everything that is thrown in his general direction.
Jason Avant.
If the ball gets thrown to Jason Avant, he catches it.
Jason Avant.
He's a fine man.
Jason
I like
Avant.
Him a lot. He's an Eagle.
Jason Avant.
What an amazing song that is. But listen, Wentz was running out of guys to throw to, so I thought that somebody might lob Jason Avant a call.
Jason
I was hoping.
Avant.
Jason Avant, if I had
Jason
his digits.
Avant.
If I had his digits, I wouldn't even use them. I don't want to insult Jason Avant. He's
Jason
a man.
Avant.
I like him a lot. He's a receiver. You throw him the ball and he catches it.
Jason Avant.
He plays for the Eagles. You throw it up, Jason Avant goes and gets it.
Jason
He's a
Avant.
Man. I like him a lot.
Jason Avant.
But then you go from bad to worse, right? Because then Wentz himself gets hurt. And even Jason Avant can't throw himself the football. But then Wentz came back. And then he's out there slinging it. And getting lit up by the Falcons defense. And pulling off ridiculous plays out of his backside like this.
Whiteside is a contested catch guy.
Right, third
point,
down
give
and
him
nine.
A chance.
Wentz looks the other way. Somehow gets away for the moment.
Whoa.
Throws under pressure and gets it away complete to the 12-yard line to Hollins.
Are you kidding me? In the world, is this knee down before he throws it?
No.
No, I think that is good.
But the thing about this brawl, Atlanta was right there. They were right there. They just couldn't finish. They couldn't put Philadelphia away. They couldn't choke them out. And to not do so would be disastrous, right? If Atlanta loses that game at home to an Eagles team that was about a play away from seeing if Mike Quick still had a few plays left in him, how devastating would that have been for the Falcons, especially after they were embarrassed in week one? I think I saw Harold Carmichael reaching for his pads. There is no way the Falcons could start the season off with two losses like that. Now, I know they've been banged up on the offensive line, but there's no way you start a season by getting blown out in Minnesota and then coming back home and losing to a banged-up Eagles team and still consider yourself a Super Bowl contender. At that point, you're probably not even a playoff team. But that's what the Falcons were looking at. Matt Ryan was off. He had thrown three interceptions. He had overthrown receivers for touchdowns on back-to-back plays. And my man, old Trevor Price, was setting up shop in order to come in here and wreck shop and call Matt Ryan the most overrated player in the history of the NFL. Then came 4th and 3 from their own 46. Just over 2 minutes to go, down 3. Maybe their season hanging in the balance. Literally. Roll it.
Snap to Ryan. Here comes Philly. Quick throw. This is Julio Jones. 45-40. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Atlanta. Holy goodness smokes.
Touchdown Atlanta, Falcons radio. I'm not sure what was more impressive. Julio Jones hitting the turbo button on the Eagles or Jake Matthews hitting the dump truck button on the Eagles secondary.
Holy goodness smokes.
To quote my man Coach K, Julio.
Damn.
Julio hit the Jets. Jake hit the steamroller. Julio went full Bo Jackson. He ran into the tunnel after he scored. An amazing moment. Ball game. Thanks for coming. Or as my man Trevor would say, set, match, game. Or match game, 78, or whatever. The thing is, that game was not over because the Eagles came right back. Did anybody really think that Carson Wentz was going to just turtle after that? Hell no. 4th and 14 from his own 39. Game on the line. Wentz does this.
Wentz in the gun. He's back. He's looking. He steps up. He is floating it downfield. He wants Aguilar, who has it inside the 20. Inside the 20. Aguilar went up and got it. Oh, it's amazing. Clock ticking. 115, 114. That was much more difficult than the one he missed.
Eagles radio, and somewhere there was an Eagle fan scraping horse dung off the street, looking to make a sandwich. At that point, how could you not think Philly wasn't going to win that game? How could you not think that Philly was not going to rip that game? You know you did. Falcon fan, you know you did. We all did. And Nelson Aguilar, who had that unforgivable drop moments earlier, came right back to make up for it with a near impossible grab. It was right there for Philly to steal. And maybe even end Atlanta's season in the process. But then Wentz goes incomplete. 2 yard gain, incomplete to set this up. 4th and 8 from the 16.
4th and 8 at the 16. 38 seconds left. Game may be in the balance. Wentz throws, caught. Ertz is going to be stopped. Shy of the first down, I believe.
He needed to get the 8 yard line. They're marking him
at the 9. And they'll review, of course, under 2 minutes.
After review, the ruling on the field stands. Atlanta's the ball. First down.
Ball game.
Sounded almost like Atlanta, didn't it? Atlanta. Falcons radio. Man, that was amazing. Just short. Atlanta. Absolutely textbook tackle from Falcons corner, Isaiah Oliver. He's listed at 6 feet, 210. If you ask Trevor, he's listed at 4'8", 130. Just kidding, Trev. No, he's listed at 210. Zach Ertz goes 6'5", 250, and Oliver just straight stoned him. Did not give an inch, because that's about all Ertz would have needed to get that first down and keep that game going. So a kick in the junk loss for the Eagles, who had no business ripping it but nearly did. Huge win for the Falcons, who had every reason to blow it and nearly did. I mean, you lose that game and their season is over before September is over, and everybody is saying same old Falcons, same old Falcons. Instead, they find a way to win, and they keep everybody from smashing that panic button after week two. And they did it by having Julio go Julio when it mattered most. I know that was a long take on that game, but that was an amazing game, really. Not great to watch in its entirety, but an amazing game in the end. Hell of a week. Hell of a Sunday. Hell of a day. Hell of a way to end it. How was your weekend?
Holy goodness smokes!
Falcon fan. Man, we were all this close to saying same old Falcons. Same old Falcons. Philly fan, you nearly ripped that. Nearly.
Atlanta.
I've got a question for you, and I already know the answer. These are my favorite kinds of questions. Ever wonder where your family comes from? Of course you do, we all do. And you can discover more about your family and learn more about your story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. Ancestry is absolutely amazing. Ancestry DNA gives you so much more though than just the place you're from. Ancestry connects you to the places in the world where your story started, and they're able to do so by using precise geographic detail and clear-cut historical insights. As an example, you can even trace your ancestors' journeys over time, following how and why your family moved from place to place. And to amplify your results, you can start a free trial on Ancestry and build a tree so your ancestors become more than just a name. It's amazing how they do this. They've combined DNA results with over 100 million family trees and billions of records to give you more insight into your genealogy and origins. Only Ancestry can tell such an amazing and rich story with unique features that give a more complete picture about a person. You know, like events that shaped them, how they made a living, and what they were really good at, what they excelled in. And Ancestry's unique features and record collections can give a more complete picture of people from your past as well, like the events that shaped them, how they made a living, even how long they attended school. And it's so easy to get started. So what you want to do is go to Ancestry.com/podcast right now and get 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Once again, go to Ancestry.com/podcast for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Ancestry.com/podcast. We are joined by Rod Carey. Rod, great to have you on. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
It's good to have you back, Rod. Thanks so much. Now, you beat Bucknell in the season opener in a game where you got out to an early lead. You took care of your business. So first, can you take me back, Rod, to last week? How soon after that game did you start thinking about Maryland, and what was the vibe like around the team for the whole week?
Well, it was they were locked in, obviously, because you're playing a ranked opponent, and that got their attention right away. And they had a good week of practice, and it showed up on Saturday. So that's always rewarding as a coach when you get that outcome after a good hard week.
Now, you're right. They had a ranked opponent. So you're going to have, or they're going to have your attention, but not only a ranked opponent, but a Maryland team that won their first two games by a combined score of 142-20, including that 63-20 smashing of 21st-ranked Syracuse. As you talk to your team about facing Maryland, specifically, what were the keys to the game in your mind?
Well, we had to come out and stop the run because they were scoring all those points, and everyone was talking about the quarterback and wide receivers, and deservedly so, but it was really the run game that was setting up everything, so we had to get after that, and for the most part, we held that in check for the day, and that set up defensively what we were what we were able to do the rest of the day.
We'll talk about that defense in a minute. Temple head coach Rod Carey is my guest. So Maryland, Rod goes up 15-13 in the third, and then Kenny Yeboah had that ridiculous one-handed catch midway through the fourth to give you the lead. What did you make of that catch?
Well, my heart jumped up into my throat first when I thought he overthrew him. But then he made the catch, and pure joy, right?
Amazing play. Great, great play. So you're up 20-15 then in the fourth quarter, and then you punt from your own 26. That results in a 55-yard return for Maryland. So they're starting first and goal at your four. At that point, what are you thinking?
Well, the punt, we had him tackled, and he squirted out of there. He's a really good player and had a nice return. And then our defense, they had a great attitude. They didn't care. Put the ball down. Let's play. Four-yard line. Minus four-yard line didn't matter to him.
Rod Carey's my guest. That's got to be so great for you to see as a head coach. So you stop them for a loss on the first play. Then they get down to the one-yard line on the second play. Then you stop them again on third down and then hit them the three-yard loss on fourth down. I mean, the defense obviously didn't mind being in that position. What was the mood on the sideline after that enormous stop?
Oh, everybody was really excited, obviously. My thing went right to, I got to get them off the field and get the offense on. I didn't want to get a penalty and get moved back any more than we were. But everybody was excited, and, of course, I flipped on to my coach hat and tried to shoo them on into the sideline and get them going.
See, now, if that had been it in and of itself, that would be amazing. But then after another tough moment on special teams, Maryland gets the ball back, first and goal from the 10. And, again, your defense comes up huge. You keep them out of the end zone. You get the ball back. I mean, making one goal line stand against the top 25 team is one thing. Making two in a row is incredible. What did that tell you about that defense?
Just how resilient they are. Like I said earlier, put the ball down wherever. They just love being on the field. And, you know, our punter had a bad punt that gave them that field position right there. And the defense just didn't flinch. And they told the punter, we're going to pick you up. We're going to stop them.
We're talking to Temple head coach Rod Carey. You know, Rod, when you come to a program and you're looking to set a certain tone, you're looking to create a culture, looking to create expectations, man, how helpful is it to get a win like that over a top 25 team, and especially in that fashion?
Oh, it's huge. There's no question. These guys have been great. They've been bought in the whole time. But then when you get that result, it just kind of cements all the hard work that they've done and all the things that we're saying. So, now our job is to keep that going, and that's sometimes harder than when it's new, but I wouldn't bet against these kids.
Hey, listen, you had a great quote after the game. I mean, the thing is, that was not a perfect game by any stretch, right? But the quote you had afterwards was, quote, everything you're supposed to do to lose a game, we did, yet we still executed well enough to overcome that. You've talked about the resilience of the defense and the stands they made, but overall, about every kid in the room, what's it say about the mental toughness of the group that you found a way to win a game that, frankly, it looked like you could lose any number of ways?
Yeah, well, they were paying attention. That they were locked in the entire time. The sideline was great. That's what it says about the kids, is that they were paying attention and locked in. Because you're right. You look at all the stats and everything, we probably should have lost the game. But we didn't. And that's a testament to those kids.
We're talking to Rod Carey. You know, Rod, when you were hired, I mean, you were hired a little bit late after Manny Diaz had taken that job and then left for Miami. So when the opportunity came up, how did you know that this was the right spot for you?
It's interesting. I was up north in my cabin in Wisconsin snowmobiling with my family and I didn't have any cell phone service. And then we're driving home, and I heard about the Manny Diaz thing, and conversations got going. And about the first or second conversation talking with Pat Kraft here, I knew it was the right fit. And was really excited about the opportunity. But just kind of funny how it all came together.
Rod, I'm so glad you mentioned what you just mentioned. And I don't mean the fit. I mean being on your snowmobile up north in Wisconsin. All right, so where exactly is your place, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it's in Cable, Wisconsin. Small town.
All right, so I don't know that area so well. Maybe you can help me out with this. So we just dropped our son off in Madison to go to the University of Wisconsin just as a student.
Oh, yeah.
But we have property in Eagle River now. How far is that from you?
Okay, so I grew up going to Eagle River, Jim. I vacationed there every day. And from my place, it's about 3 hours from there.
Okay, so when I look at that place, Rod, I'm a California guy, so I'm not sure about the wintertime. You mentioned snowmobiling. Is Eagle River going to be a good place in the wintertime, and can I get with that snowmobile life? What am I going to do in the winter?
Yeah, well, you're going to want to be on a snowmobile. Otherwise, you don't want to be outside walking because it's going to be cold, my man.
No doubt about that. So what about that snowmobile? What's that life like?
It's fun. You pack up the kids, put them on the back, and it's like riding a motorcycle on the snow. It's as fun as it can be.
I like it. Good to hear it. Rod Carey joining us. I appreciate the advice. Listen, before you go, you were coming into a program, and so you're working with players who had had four coaches in 4 years because the coaches had a lot of success, but at the same time, that kind of turnover can be really tough on players. So how'd you go about building relationships and trust with players who had been through so much?
Well, it takes time. That's the easiest thing I can tell you, and we're still not probably all the way there yet because relationships are built on time. But when you walk into a team that has gone through that, they were bonded together. And I saw that as a strength, not as a threatening thing to me. So we just played into that, and we're coming together. The guys are believing and trusting, and so are we.
And plus, you know, kids, and I say kids, but young adults, young athletes, whatever you want to say, they're resilient. They bounce back. What about your quarterback, Anthony Russo? Now, he said that playing in a number of different offenses over the past few years has actually been a good thing for him because he's smarter. It seems to me it'd be very easy for a quarterback, a young quarterback, to go through all that and get confused, get down, get frustrated. How impressed are you when you hear him say it's actually a good thing? It's made me better.
Well, that tells you how smart he is, right? Because normally kids go through that, and it is hard on them. It's not on him because of how intelligent and football smart he is. So super impressed with him.
Rod, let me ask you this. You and I have talked about your journey in the past, and it's an amazing story. But for those who do not know, you were a 3-year starting center at Indiana and during some great years there, by the way. At the end of your career, you went to your head coach, Bill Mallory, and you said, "Coach, do I have a chance at the NFL?" What do you remember about his response, and what was your reaction to it?
Well, Coach Mallory didn't mince words. He said, plain and simple, "I don't see it." I said, "Okay, well, I thought that conversation was going to be a little longer than it was, so on to the next."
So at that point, he thought it would be a little bit longer. At that point, how much thought had you given to coaching?
I hadn't really at that point, but then my high school coach, I went home, graduated college, and I was just kind of hanging out a little bit in the summer, and my high school coach grabbed me and said, "You're going to come coach." And I found out later, my dad had talked to him, said, "Hey, you got to do something with him. He's just laying around right now." So they kind of conspired to get me on the football field.
I like it. And then a last thought. The thing is, this has not been necessarily like a glamorous ride. I mean, you were an assistant in high school. Then you were a GA. You were an assistant in places like Wisconsin Stout. I mean, if you're putting in that kind of grind, you're not doing it for the money. What do you love about coaching and that gig and the process so much?
Yeah, I get asked that question in Rome, to be honest with you. I don't know if I could live without it. That's what I love about it. It's given me way more than I can give it.
I accept that. I like that response. I like that response, and I like now that I've got a snowmobiling guru if I need it. Rod Carey is the head football coach at Temple, first year there, and they're coming off a huge win over Maryland, and it starts up once again this Saturday against Buffalo. Rod, it's good to have you back. I appreciate that. Let's make sure we do it again soon.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you, Rome.
Sign up and become an O Rewards member today and earn 1 point for every $1 you spend. Receive your rewards twice as fast and on the go when you provide your email address. O Rewards members get $5 back for every $150 they spend. It's fast, it's easy, and it's free, and it's only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store or orewards.com for details. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So let's settle a debate. Right here, right now, once and for all, who is the true king of New York? Is it the icon, the legend, Frank Sinatra? It's up to you. Who's cooler than Frank? Gotta love Frank. But you gotta love Frank. Born in Jersey. Singing his guts out about New York. Yeah, I don't know, maybe Hoboken, Hoboken. didn't have the same ring to it. I don't know. Maybe a son of the Garden State can't be the king of the Empire State. Maybe it's the Big Apple born and raised hip-hop living legend Jay-Z. Anyone from anywhere could call Sean Carter the Don of New York, and nobody would have an issue with that, right? Nobody would raise a hand in objection. Nobody would think twice. Am I right? Anybody from anywhere? Maybe. That is, until yesterday. Until 53 savages from 400 miles away made their second trip down the 86 in as many weeks and reminded the world that New York isn't a city, it's a state. And if you're looking for a new anthem to bump from Soho to Niagara Falls, look no further than this right here. The Buffalo freaking Bills, the undisputed, undefeated true kings of New York. Not just 2-0 on the season, but 2-0 by way of smashing up the Jets and the Giants in their shared house of MetLife Stadium, which I'm officially going to rename Bills Life Stadium because it is their crib now. The Empire State is now the Mafia State. The up-and-coming shiny city with a population of, I don't know, 280K runs that show back east. Let's talk about this. Buffalo 28, the New York Football Giants 14. Josh Allen, one clean-ass game. Eli Manning, anything but. I don't know what was the more Eli Manning stat from yesterday. The two interceptions or the fact that he threw for less yards than Josh Allen on 15 more attempts. I don't know, and honestly, I don't care, because this is about the Bills and my man Frank Gore. Frank Gore, still getting it done 15 years into his brilliant, and if you ask me, Hall of Fame career.
Snap. Frank Gore buries his head, drives in into the end zone, touchdown. Frank Gore just bowls his way into the end zone from 1 yard out. He steamrolled his way into the end zone.
The Kings of New York Radio Network. Nothing like a Jungle Karma insurance TD with 5 minutes left to go. And it was more than enough to put that game on ice because the Bills chased that Frank Gore sixer by turning the Giants over on downs and then picking Eli off one drive later. Yes, it is early, but why wait to party when you can party right now? And this is the Mafia we're talking about. So why don't we all just jump through a table and freaking party right now? Wait for who? Wait for what? Through two games, the Bills are top 10 in total yardage, top 10 in rushing yards per game. On the defensive side, top 6 in both yards allowed and points allowed. In other words, they are balanced. And all you haters who can't wait to point out that it's only the Jets, it's only the Giants, it's only two games, man, get the hell out of here with that. The Bills don't make the schedule, they play the schedule, and they're playing the hell out of it. Josh Allen got it done through the air, on the ground, and definitely at the podium afterwards. Check out this reporter getting a geography lesson when he reminded Josh Allen that the Jets and the Giants were both on the board before the Bills picked in 2018, and he could have easily been in New York.
Could have ended up in New York. Obviously, the Jets were heavily involved.
I am in New York.
I am in New York. Damn straight. Have some. Last I checked, Buffalo was in New York, and so is Josh Allen. And the Buffalo, New York Bills are running the state right now. Ask the Jets. Ask the Giants. And not to get too technical with it, but the Bills are the only New York-based team to actually play their games in New York. But that's none of my business. And when the Bills do get back to a stadium that's actually sitting on New York land, they will be 2-0. So keep your rubber dongas at home this year, Mafia. The Nate Peterman days are over. You're royalty now. The official Kings of New York. And don't let a couple of New Jersey teams tell you otherwise. There are some new Kings of New York. Throw your hands up and shout. Leave your rubber dongas at home, Mafia. You don't need it anymore. Head coach Kalani Sitake is my guest. Kalani, so good to have you back. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Man, I'll tell you what, it's great to have you back, and what a year you've had already. If we were to go back to the start of the season, I want to do that because you started the season with a tough loss to a really good Utah team, and it's always such a special game. You and I have talked about this in the past, but it could be a tough one to lose to start the year. How would you describe how you and your players dealt with that in the hours and the days after that loss?
Well, I was just really happy with the way our players respond from that game early in the season, the first game, and the leadership that they provided, but an opportunity for them to learn from it. And the next day, you know, we played that game Thursday night, and next day our guys showed up, our team showed up ready to work, and I couldn't be more pleased as a head coach to see our players take the initiative and be ready to roll and get ready to learn and try to improve from that performance to the next one. And I've been really, really pleased with our players and then with our coaches and our staff and getting ready for the season.
You know, we talked about earlier in the program, you see it a lot of times in young athletes, man, they're resilient. They can bounce back quickly. And then you go on the road to Knoxville, and you come from behind in the fourth quarter, and you hit a field goal to send that game into OT. Before we get to the overtime experience, what did that fourth quarter on the road and hitting that field goal tell you about your players?
Well, our guys kept the belief up. I mean, the effort has been amazing all year long, and that's something that we hang our hats on. But the energy and the belief that they had in each other, it just goes to show the things that our players do and the connection that they have with each other and with our coaching staff is something really special, you know. And so it's just been really, like I said, the players are doing an amazing job, and it's been such a wonderful sight for me as a head coach to see happen. And that game was a good step for our players trusting each other and believing in each other, and the outcome came out the way that we wanted.
Kalani Sitake joining us, the head coach of BYU. So you're tied after the first overtime, and then they had that field goal to take the lead in the second overtime, and then you guys score on that five-yard run. I know you just mentioned what it meant to you as a head coach to see that, but when you guys score on that five-yard TD run to win it, what goes through you when that happened?
Oh, just pure energy and excitement. Just so happy for the players. And it was a hard-fought game. I mean, every week there's something that we can learn from and get better. But it was such a cool moment for us to do it with a win, you know, and have our guys work so hard for it and have it work out their way. I mean, hats off, like I said, to Tennessee. They had an amazing game plan, and it was such a cool moment, a good experience for our guys, and a wonderful memory that should last them a whole lifetime.
So that you have that, but what you have also is a couple of really emotional weeks, really tough weeks. I mean, it's great to get that road win in double OT, but then you've got to bounce right back and face a top 25 team in USC. So how did you go about getting your guys ready for that and making sure they were focused and able to bounce back quickly and get ready for the Trojans?
Once again, at the opportunity for us to learn again and try to improve from week two to week three was important for us, and I had the same guys that showed up after a loss willing to learn and connect and work together, and the same thing happened again after we won. And, you know, there's that old saying that you either win or learn, and for us it's win and learn. And so we're looking at this opportunity for us to learn every week and to get better, and I've been really pleased with these guys and the approach that they have to every game, and every week's been the same. Whether it's the outcome that we wanted or not, these guys have showed up and been ready to work, and they've done this from the off season. So I still have to go back to our players and credit them for all the hard work and the trust that they have in each other.
Kalani Sitake is joining us, BYU, with that tough win over USC. And then, you know, you've been in this situation already before early in the season, but you fall behind by 7 in the fourth quarter. You come back yet again to take the lead. USC ties it. That sends the game to overtime. Again, I know you've been in this spot, but what was your mood on the sideline as you got ready for this OT?
Same thing, a lot of great energy coming from our players, you know, and we were able to feed off of it from our fans as well. It was an electric atmosphere, and our fans made a lot of noise, you know, so I think it was something important for us to lean on their energy too. But the energy from our players now going into the crowd, and it was just a fun moment for everyone, you know, and it was nice to have the fans rush the field and be up close with them. You know, I grew up a BYU fan, so it was a nice fan moment for me to celebrate with our fans and our players. That was such a cool moment for us. And once again, we're looking forward to learning from what we did with USC and what we can learn from and get better as a team and try to improve from that week to this week.
I thought that was an amazing moment when the fans came on the field. And then at the end of the game, the defense comes up big. Dion Kowoluku makes the game-winning interception, and I want to talk about what makes him special, but what about that particular play? What did you see on that play, and then what was your reaction when that was official?
Well, he was frustrated because earlier in the game, he had an opportunity to get an interception off another tip pass earlier in the game and wasn't able to come up with a play. And, you know, it's this belief that he has in himself. He kept saying on the sideline, even during the timeout, that he's going to find a way to make a play. And it's the just a relentless effort. These guys were running to the ball. You know, he was actually covering someone else and knew that the ball had been thrown and then turned and sprinted to see what he can do to help make the play. And we've had unbelievable effort from our players on all three phases. And then I was just thankful that the effort paid off in the end and that Dion was able to make the play. He's a big playmaker for us. And sometimes as a corner, it gets quiet. That means you're doing your job. But I'm glad that he was able to make some noise with that catch.
Yeah, Dion, he is a huge playmaker. He had 9 tackles. He had a pass breakup. He had a rushing touchdown. And then, of course, that game-winning interception. What is it that sets him apart and makes him so special?
He comes from a wonderful family, and he is a relentless work ethic. And so the fact that he makes plays, he's been doing that for years, and he is an unbelievable leader and teammate for our players. These guys have a lot of fun together, and they enjoy the moment. And I'm just so thankful that they were able to make some memories and thankful that we have such great people like Dion on our team. And looking forward to see what else he can do this season.
I mean, Kalani, they have fun together, but you have fun with them as well. Even though you're the coach and the leader, you've got some time, or you make time to have fun with them, because that was the program's first win over a ranked opponent at home since 2015. So, of course, you had to break out another dance in the locker room. What was your thought process going into this dance? And how special is that to have fun with the guys and share that with them the way you do?
Well, I used to dance a lot better back in my day, you know, but when we used to go to clubbing and all that stuff. But I'm not a dancer much anymore. My daughters have specifically asked me to stop dancing, but I told them that Daddy's going to do whatever the players want me to do, and if they ask me to dance, I'm going to do it. And we try to have a lot of fun. We work really hard, you know, and our guys work really hard, and so the time that you can celebrate together, I think we have to take advantage of that as much as possible. And sometimes I look like a fool, but I mean, I still got a few moves in me, you know. But
you do.
It's all about the boys, man, and whenever they want. They get, and that's my job is to facilitate their dreams and help them out and have great experiences for them while they're here at BYU. And you know, when they go out to the world, they're going to be great contributors to the human race, and I'm excited about the process of it.
You know, I'm really glad that you laid that out the way you did, because it takes me to my next point. Aaron Roderick, who is on your staff and who has known you for a long time, said over the summer, and I quote, "People want to win for him because they know he cares for them. He goes out of his way to help people." He also said, quote, "He's a great leader and a great human being. Every person in our building loves him, and they know that he genuinely loves them," end quote. Look, a lot of coaches might try to lead through fear or intimidation. How do you go about leading through love?
I'm a product of other people's love. And so it'd be foolish for me not to return that to others, you know. So I think you're giving me too much credit for things that I think come naturally when so many others have sacrificed and put a lot of hard work into raising me and mentoring me. I have wonderful mentors and people that I look up to and people that have just gone out of their way to help my life become better. And so all I'm doing is trying to share what I've learned. You know, if that works in coaching, it's just who I am. And then I enjoy it. I can't be anyone else but myself. And ugly dance moves and everything it included, I'm going to be myself and I'm going to have fun doing it. But I enjoy coaching because of the connection that I get to make with people, with the fans, with the administration, with the teachers, faculty, and staff, and with our coaches, and definitely with our players. That's the highlight of my life. I get to spend time with these people, and I'm just thankful that I have a wonderful wife and children that allow me to spend some time with others, because it's become a huge highlight of my life.
Kalani Sitake joining us. All right, so if going to Tennessee and then playing at home against USC were not enough, now you have Washington coming to your place. How do you go about getting ready and preparing for the Huskies?
Well, I have tons of admiration for Chris Peterson and the way he leads that team. He's done an amazing job, and he has a wonderful staff, and we have tons of respect for that team and that program. So we're excited about them coming to Provo and being here, and we're looking forward to being on the field with them and competing, but a great deal of respect for them and their program. And I think it's good for college football for us to have this opportunity, this matchup. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see how we match up, but really looking forward to the opportunity and the experience that we can play them this year.
So really quickly, when you look at the matchup, what concerns you the most about them?
Well, it's every year. Coach Peterson has that group ready, and they're replacing starters, but it's like a machine there where they just have guys fit into their puzzle and pieces to the puzzle, and they put it together brilliantly. You know, so I think that's going to be something that we're going to have to be on task for, and we feel good about the progress that we've made throughout the season. We'll see how much improvement we make from this week from last week to this week, and really looking forward to the matchup. That's the key. We've learned quite a bit from the earlier in the season, and I think this is going to be a good matchup for us to test us where how we can be against a powerhouse like Washington.
Mike, you had to like what you saw early on. What's going on?
Fans smack. The place was rocking, dude. Hey, thanks for taking a phone call. You know, first of all, you know, I could filibuster on the nostalgia of Jim, of making probably my last phone call to this radio show from Oakland. You know, how I'll miss the scrap metal piles, the concertina wire, or the double wide rows of homeless tents that surround Oakland Alameda Stadium. But Jim, first and foremost here, the number one rule in the jungle is scoreboard. Now, forget about giving up touchdown passes on 3rd and 20 or the fact our quarterback threw an in-zone interception on 1st and goal from the 4. This game came down to one fact and one fact only. The Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes and the Raiders don't. On 4 straight drives in the second quarter yesterday, the Raiders went 3 and out. And on 4 straight times, Mahomes made them pay. And, dude, the last one was this beautiful 39-yard back shoulder masterpiece to DeMarcus Robinson. I mean, Connelly had the game. I mean, he had the coverage. But, I mean, set, match, coverage, game, whatever. This kid, he's got the arm of John Elway, the release of Dan Marino, and the savviness of Brett Favre, plus the instincts of all three. Hell, he went for 620 yards and 7 touchdowns in 2 games against New England last year. Big thing, though, first of all, I want to tip my hat to the fat man Andy Reid and to Brett Veach for having the vision to move up in the draft and get a gunslinger from an air raid offense. Oh, and by the way, Veach was the guy who discovered Fletcher Cox, LeSean McCoy, and DeSean Jackson when he was in Philly with Reid. So, Jim, yesterday pretty much the highlight of the game for me after the first quarter was jawing with Travis Kelce behind the KC bench before he shut me up with his touchdown catch. A fantastic last trip to the East Bay here, Jim. Raiders, they go on a brutal 5-game road trip that the NFL should be ashamed of jamming them with. This is going to test the mettle of this football team, Jim. That's all I got. Thanks for putting me up.
Raider Mike.
Good night now!